This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All righty then, we've reached the middle of the week. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show. And man, we touched on, Steve, the AFC East quarterback news yesterday. And in the latest installment of As the World Turns for the AFC East teams not named the Buffalo Bills, it is quarterback stuff again. I mean, this stuff just keeps taking new twists and turns. I don't know what to make of it. Like, we heard from reports yesterday that, and WFAN talk show host Craig Carton was kind of throwing this out there. Nobody else was corroborating it. And he doubled down today and basically said that the other team that's interested in Aaron Rodgers are the San Francisco 49ers, who are also Aaron Rodgers' hometown team growing up. Now, I know when he got drafted, I remember him saying, I want to stick it to the Niners for not drafting me. But that was, what, 20 years ago? Be a nice way to end your career with a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
And so, basically, this is kind of where it sits right now. As Craig Carton puts it, he says that Aaron Rodgers would absolutely want to play for this franchise, the San Francisco 49ers. While they have Trey Lance, he's coming off a broken ankle. They have Brock Purdy. He's coming off UCL elbow surgery and isn't going to be throwing until August or September. And they did sign Sam Darnold in free agency. None of those players, I think at this point in time, could be deemed a franchise quarterback. Certainly not the caliber of Aaron Rodgers.
Even a 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers, you're right.
So as we know, Aaron Rodgers, I believe he's from Chico, California, which is Northern California, has always said he may want to go home and play one day.
Is this where we're supposed to say it makes a lot of sense? Or, yeah.
You can.
That was low-hanging fruit.
So here's the reality. San Francisco doesn't have a first-round draft pick in this year's draft. They gave them away to move up to get Trey Lance last year or the year before. But they do have compensatory picks, 3 third-round picks this year. So according to Craig Carton at WFAN, the conversation has been multiple third-round picks in this year's draft and a first-round pick next year's draft. So you put Aaron Rodgers on the 49ers. Now, I know they lost some pieces on their defense. They lost a couple to free agency. So they are not going to be the same defense they were last year when they led the league, but they're still going to be probably top 10. I think that's pretty safe to say. Maybe even top 5. You put Aaron Rodgers on that team in an NFC West that is a rebuilding Arizona team. Their chief competition is probably Seattle, who's putting together a nice roster again. Yeah. The Rams, who knows what they're going to look like after a horrible year last year.
Right.
So it's a two-horse race.
Yeah.
You got Aaron Rodgers, and they got Geno. I like my odds if you're the 49ers and you're able to land Rodgers.
I agree. If you can swing it financially, I think it's a great fit. Kyle Shanahan would have probably the best quarterback he has had. Without question, you have the best quarterback he has had in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
On a team that he's gotten to the Super Bowl twice, once with Jimmy and the other time with – or once he's gotten there. No,
yeah.
Did he get there twice?
Once.
He got there once with Jimmy and has gotten close with Brock Purdy.
And he got there as an OC in Atlanta with Matt Ryan.
Right. But this is as good an offensive coach as there is in the league right now in Kyle Shanahan. Great play caller, schemer, all of it.
Yeah. Now – we have to remember.
And he's been doing it with smoke and mirrors with the quarterback spot.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers said, it is his intention to play for the Jets. Who do you think he would rather work with as an offensive play caller? I don't know if there's anybody that tops Kyle Shanahan. No disrespect to Nate Hackett, but
right.
Kyle Shanahan's in a league of his own as far as play calling is concerned. I mean, maybe you put a few other guys up there with him, but not many. I mean, he is top tier. Play
Absolutely.
Caller.
He's up there.
A 40-year-old quarterback would be a fool to not go play
and
for that guy.
Same thing Sean Payton in Denver. I'm thinking around. Yeah, those are the guys. Because our boy Brian Daboll in New York doesn't call plays. He's the head coach. He's not doing that anymore. Sean Payton does that for Denver. Kyle Shanahan does that for San Francisco. They're both head coaches. Brian Daboll does not do that. And I'm thinking of other offensive guys.
McVay.
McVay does it. So does the guy in Cincinnati. McCoy.
Zach Taylor,
not McCoy. And then LaFleur in Green Bay does it. Short list.
Peyton will do it in Denver.
Right. But Kyle Shanahan has been doing it with less. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And that says something. And that's why this is so intriguing, because you give Aaron Rodgers, even a 40-year-old Aaron Rodgers, to a guy like Kyle Shanahan.
With Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel, right. Brandon Ayuk, and George Kittle.
You'd have, and I think
I mean,
Rodgers.
Just write their ticket.
Usually, in Green Bay, there's always this thing of is Aaron really buying in, you know, with what LaFleur's doing? Is he buying in? Is he happy with the guys he's got around him? There's always this stuff, questions about how Aaron feels about his team, because, you know, they've never given him a first-round wide receiver, and all that stuff. It'd be hard for him to conjure up a reason not to be 100% all in. And if Kyle Shanahan says, listen, we're going to hand it off every play on this drive, Aaron's saying, okay, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? You'd never do that to him in Green Bay, because he wouldn't be happy. But with Kyle Shanahan and the credibility he has, he might be able to convince a guy like Aaron Rodgers at 40 years old to say, listen, you're going to have to share the ball a little bit more. Or whatever it may be. And so it's intriguing. It's really intriguing.
If you gave me my choice, I am going to the Niners. I'm not even blinking. I'm going there. Just to work with Kyle Shanahan as an offensive play caller? Like, he's one of the top two guys in the league.
Yeah, there's
so
many.
It's not even a question. Yeah, not to mention everything that's around me. Christian McCaffrey's in my backfield.
Kittle?
I got George Kittle at tight end, and I got Debo Samuel, the most dynamic player with the ball in his hands in the open field in the league. I mean,
do they go straight to the top of the heap in the NFC?
Oh, right there. Ticket.
Right there.
Do you know
right
how
there.
Watered down the NFC is?
Just
right now?
Like that. The conference is down. The conference is down anyway. Who's gonna take it away from him? Daniel Jones? Dak?
I mean, maybe Philly. Philly. That's probably it.
I don't know, maybe.
And they lost some people in free
agency.
They
lost some
too.
People.
So
do they keep? You think Philly comes back just as hungry?
Well, they have two. They have two ones. You know, you hit on those two first round picks, you could fix a lot of their holes.
Yeah, I get it. But still.
But it's a two horse.
San Francisco
race. It's
right there.
Eagles and Niners. It's basically Eagles and Niners. It's basically what it is.
That's a really intriguing prospect to me.
Yeah. This is how bad it's gotten in New York. After hearing yesterday that there's another team involved, now getting the team identified. And we suspect, we threw a few teams out there yesterday that suspected it might be. The Niners were one of them. Tampa Bay was another. This is where Jet fans are, because I went on a Jet fan site. They're like, we don't get Rodgers, we're screwed. We may have to use the 13th pick on a quarterback.
Oh, yeah, because the 2 and the 3 pick they had 6 years ago went so well.
Well, that's the thing. I got to believe that they're going to get Joe Douglas to blink, and this is why. Joe Douglas missed on Zach Wilson. You draft another quarterback at 13, and you miss again, you're fired.
Yeah.
You're fired.
Oh, yeah.
You can't miss on the quarterback with a first-round pick twice in a row. You can't. He's fired. There's no way he's drafting a quarterback at 13 because of his own job security.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
I'm with you. I think the Jets.
He'll give up 2 ones for Lamar before he drafts one this year.
2 ones and a contract.
Yeah.
That's. That's a problem for Joe Douglas.
He cannot draft another quarterback if he doesn't have full confidence in himself to hit on the guy, because he's out of mulligans. He's out of them. You miss again on the quarterback, you're done.
Here's what
he doesn't care. Maybe he will do it. I don't know. But
yeah, here's the thing. What the Packers are doing is just saying, okay, who's got the best offer? And what the Packers and what I think the Jets are doing is they're saying, give me the best offer that San Francisco's got. We'll match it or better it. And they have to hope that it's a real offer, a bona fide offer, that they're not just pumping their tires, which I think they will, which I don't think they will. They won't. They're not going to, because these guys all have to do business with each other, and they're not going to, there's a little less of this gamesmanship at the general manager level than you might think, than I think there is. I think there's less of that because these guys negotiate in good faith all the time. Like on a phone call and at draft day, they got to believe each other.
Yeah.
So I think that's what Green Bay's going to do. They'll say, listen, this is what San Francisco's offering us. What do you say? And they go, well, we'll give you this. And they go, okay, but I'm going to go back to them, see what they'll give me, and go back. Now, if Joe Douglas wants to call who's the GM?
John Lynch.
John Lynch. If he wants to call John Lynch, say, hey, here's my – what are you willing to go? And let him do it that way without the Packers in the room? Maybe.
I don't see that happening.
But
it's
that's what's
going to
– and to me, that's where the Jets
are
right
now.
How am
I going to trust he's going to tell me what they're going
to
actually get?
That's what they're saying. That's what the Jets are going to do. They're going to say, listen, whatever the offer is, we'll match it and get better than it. They have to. To me, they have to. Their fan base will absolutely –
clearly, they're not. Otherwise, the deal would have happened already.
Well, not really, because we didn't hear about this being interested until – I wonder what changed.
We're going on the third week now.
Yeah, but no, we haven't heard about San Francisco being involved in this until lately. So if San Francisco's out there and they're saying, hey, whoa, 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 what's New York getting away with? A 3? And a next year a 2? And if he plays again next year, it's a 1? We'll give you 2 3s and a 1 next year if he plays. You know, that kind of thing. Because once your word gets out and there's a team out there that says, oh, we're not that great at quarterback, we'll get in on that. Yeah. Well, then the price goes up. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's where the Jets are. Everybody knows the Jets are, and it's going to happen and all that. And now the rest of the league is saying, listen, you ain't letting the Jets off that easy. Listen, Aaron Rodgers is, we've got Jordan, we've got Trey Lance, and we've got Purdy, we got these guys, and we signed Sam Darnold. But listen, if you're going to get Aaron Rodgers for that, forget it. I'll take him for that. You know? So that's kind of where I think this came from. I think San Francisco's like, yeah, because they're signing these guys. They got Purdy, they signed Sam Darnold.
They have 2 guys on rookie deals.
And then, then they're finding out, you know, Aaron Rodgers, the Jets are probably, they're going to do this and this. And then it turns out they don't have to do this and this. All they got to do is that. It's like, whoa. Is this what I'm hearing? Green Bay? You're going to give Aaron Rodgers to the Jets for that?
Yeah.
How about this instead?
We'll see if it gets it done.
Yeah. And because nobody's going to let the Jets walk away with Aaron Rodgers for a 6. Or a second, that kind of thing.
The word on the street is a 2 this year, one of their picks, either 42 or 43, and then a 2 next year that can become a 1 if Rodgers commits to play in 2024. That's
right.
The reported capital necessary to get it done, and I don't know where the Jets are coming up short. So whatever, but it prompted another team to get in the mix, and they're in the mix now. And have fun with that, Jets.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is in all of this, Brownie, is we think it's been reported. I don't know if that's exactly the way Joe Douglas understands it, or the Niners John Lynch understands it, or Gutekunst understands it in Green Bay, the 3 GMs. They may have, the report may be, it's close, it's not exactly right. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I don't, you know, this isn't like, we're not looking at the offer sheets ourselves. So the GMs are going, you know, Joe Douglas might be getting roasted in New York, and he's sitting there going, hey, what? What are you talking about? There's always that possibility. And believe me, Brownie, write this on the whiteboard. If the deal with the Jets and Aaron Rodgers falls through, Joe Douglas is going to have a different understanding of why it fell through than the media now on the day of. He's not going to go out there and say he didn't get Aaron Rodgers because of a second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's going to have a different story. Because if it comes out and it's not expensive enough for the fan base, if it's not too expensive for the fan base, you're going to get absolutely, you're going to be tied to a spit turning over an open fire.
Well, the Jets haven't disappointed in this area before.
We've seen the Jet logo over a fire before.
Yeah. That wouldn't be the first time and probably wouldn't be the last.
Joe must go.
Elsewhere in the AFC East, Steve, we told you yesterday how Bill Belichick was incensed that Mac Jones, in a fit of frustration about the ineptitude of the offense, play calling, and the like, sought out counsel from his former Alabama offensive staff, which includes his current offensive coordinator in New England, Bill O'Brien, for some guidance as to how to have some measure of success in an offense that was broken.
Yeah.
Belichick gets word of this and goes off the deep end. And then at the owners' meetings last week, when Belichick is asked if Mac Jones is cemented as the starter for next year, he refused to commit to him. Now we hear New England has been shopping Mac Jones around ahead of his third NFL season. Belichick apparently still upset with Jones over seeking the outside counsel at the University of Alabama. Not only that, you have Patriots owner Robert Kraft on the other side of this, at least publicly, because he has been very supportive of Mac Jones. And he has suggested that the offensive staff failed the quarterback last year. So you have Belichick, who's crying insubordination on one side of this and is actively shopping him, according to reports. And on the other side, you've got the owner who is supporting the player. I'm just going to tell you this, Steve. In the history of professional sports, when it comes down to coach and player, the player is undefeated. Magic Johnson and Paul Westhead, Magic wins.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay.
What's the other one I was thinking of earlier, now that it's slipped my mind? There were a couple other examples I had. I should have written them down, dang it. The player usually wins these, especially if he is an asset that the owner believes is worth keeping. Now, Mac Jones is not Magic Johnson.
You got that right. That's what I was going to say.
So that could be the fly in the ointment in my argument here.
That might get in the way.
But when it comes to owners and coaches, owners win.
Oh, yeah.
So I got to tell you, this has me intrigued. You're going to have the ultimate power struggle between Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick brewing here. If Kraft wants to dig his heels in on this,
yeah,
it's going to get ugly.
I think that's the way Bob Kraft does business. He's all for the people in his building, even if the people in the building are disagreeing. He's not going to throw Mac Jones under the bus. He'd never do that. And I don't think he'd throw Bill Belichick under the bus. And I think he regretfully and somberly acknowledged the problems they had last year in the interviews and the coaches league meetings. He acknowledged the problems they had without throwing Bill Belichick under the bus. But he also said, listen, and he also admitted that he's holding Bill Belichick accountable as well. There were some things out there like all of a sudden, you know, the exaggerated Twitter conversation went like, oh my gosh, Robert Kraft put Bill Belichick on the hot seat. There's nothing like that. But he did say, listen, you got to win. I mean, you got to win. And they haven't won consistently in the last couple of years. And last year was a step back by that organization. Absolutely no question about it. And he acknowledged it. So I don't think – listen, Bill Belichick's got some juice. But Robert Kraft has an orchard of oranges. You know, I mean, that guy's
yeah.
right? He's going to win that
now,
battle.
Now, here's the interesting dynamic at play, because it wasn't that long ago when a decision had to be made on the future of Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
And Belichick did not want to trade him. And Robert Kraft signed off on it because he loves Brady and wanted Brady to keep playing. Belichick was ready to turn the page probably sooner than we saw it turned there.
Right, before they won the last Super
Bowl. He was going to turn to Garoppolo and did not want to trade him. Who won that? The owner. And they traded Garoppolo for a two. And Belichick didn't like that. Now the shoe's on the other foot. Belichick's trying to trade Mac Jones. What's going to happen here? I think Robert Kraft's going to step in and say, you're not trading Mac Jones.
For Bailey Zappi? You're going to trade Mac Jones and start
and roll with
Bailey
Zappi.
Zappi. And I get this, too. Some of the players were saying some players on the team wanted Bailey Zappi last year. They were all in on him, thought he was going to be great and all that.
Well, he had one decent start, and people thought he was the second coming.
Right.
And then he played again and flamed out in horrific fashion.
Right. And so I got news for you. There ain't going to be another TB12 in that organization ever. Ever.
Nope.
And you can say what you want. Bill Belichick, if they would have traded Tom Brady and kept Garoppolo like Belichick is reportedly wanted to do back in the day, he'd already be fired.
Yeah.
He already be gone because Brady would have gone to wherever it was they were trying to San Francisco. Can you imagine Brady in San Francisco right now? I mean, that, you know, he'd be walking out with two more Super Bowls instead of just one.
Yeah.
From Tampa Bay. I mean, and Belichick, he looks horrible in this.
Yeah.
He looks really bad. And this is as bad as Bill Belichick has looked since he was head coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Speaking of the Bucs, they are one of the teams rumored to be contacted by Belichick. Commanders, Titans also in the mix. Not surprising, all teams with, you know, quarterback needs in some way, shape, or form. So we'll see where it goes. But, oh, boy, do I love it. Love the controversy, Steve. Keep it coming in the AFC East. I'm here for all of it.
Well, let me just say this. You know how this popped out on Twitter, this thing about Mac Jones getting traded from the Patriots. And it hasn't happened, but they're shopping him and stuff. You can imagine the conversation on social media with what Bills fans and Jet fans and Dolphin fans thought about the value on the trade market for Mac Jones. They were not complimentary. They were not complimentary. And, you know, Josh McDaniels, to me, Josh McDaniels squeezed every ounce of value out of Mac Jones he could and got him to the playoffs. And without Josh McDaniel pulling the trigger and calling the plays and designing stuff, they couldn't get it done. And they had an outstanding defense last year.
It was good.
They had an outstanding defense, and they just could not get it done.
I don't know if I'd call it outstanding, but it was certainly quality defense. I think they were top 12 in points allowed. No, they were top 10 in points allowed. And, you know, top 10 or 12 in a lot of different categories. They were, I don't know if I'd call them elite, but they were very good. They were very good. Very good defense. And they had a top-flight pass rusher in Judon, as we know. So, yeah, they did a nice job. From the rumors to the outright nefarious alleged practices of the Arizona Cardinals, Steve, Arizona Cardinals owner Michael Bidwell, accused of gross misconduct, including cheating, discrimination, and harassment in an arbitration claim filed yesterday by their former executive, Terry McDonough, to NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. McDonough maintains that both he and former Cardinals head coach Steve Wilks we're left with no choice but to follow Bidwell's plan to use burner phones to communicate with former Arizona GM Steve Keim while Keim was serving a five-week suspension after pleading guilty to extreme DUI in Arizona. McDonough said he still has the phone, which he said contains the evidence of the cheating scandal, as well as additional documentation. In a detailed response sent to ESPN, the Cardinal strongly denied the allegations, calling them baseless.
So
the guy's got the phone.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. I'll say this, I know that the Arizona Cardinals are, you know, notoriously non-playoff contenders, and they've been a mediocre win-loss franchise for a long time. They've switched locations, switched cities twice. All of that. But I don't know that you're even going to get a shrug out of most NFL teams, and maybe not even the commissioner, over a GM who's not in the office but still getting called by his staff.
The question here that needs to be looked at with a microscope now is the cheating allegation. There are a multitude of ways to cheat,
right,
in the NFL or any professional sport. What is the nature of the cheating? What are
right.
we talking about? And the details on that, I'm sure, will come out at some point. But
what it is,
that's
the GM,
not good.
The GM was, what, suspended by the league for 6 months?
5 weeks.
5 weeks. Okay, so he was suspended for a month and a week. And during that month and a week, had contact with the guys he worked with on a day-to-day basis. I don't know how often he communicated, but they communicated through him nefariously.
But what did they do to cheat is the question.
That's it. That's what they did, it sounds like.
Yeah, but what is the actual substance of the cheating?
He's not allowed to do any business.
Well, that's a violation. That's not cheating.
Well, that's what they're
Are they cheating the game? Like, that's what I want to know. Like, are you cheating the game like Stephen Ross allegedly was when he was throwing games for money to pay coaches to throw games? Like, is it that?
That doesn't sound like that's what this is. This sounds like they were letting the GM be the GM when he was suspended for 5 weeks. That's what it sounds
cheating
like to me.
Cheating scandal.
I have a hard time getting my dander up if that's what it is. So they let the GM be the GM even though he wasn't supposed to be at work for 5 weeks. All right, well, I have a hard time breaking a sweat over that. I know that, come on, bro. It might have been during the season. I get it. I can't even remember when it was. But, wow. To me, that, but the thing about the other stuff, the other allegations he had, not just the cheating, but the other accusations in the charge,
discrimination, harassment, gross misconduct, all that stuff shouldn't fly.
But the gross misconduct, I mean, the guy was suspended because he was driving while he was absolutely intoxicated. I don't know how he kept his job, period.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a two-time offender.
Yeah.
That's more egregious to me than having him do the job while he's suspended for that. He shouldn't have been suspended. He should have been.
Yeah.
And so, but if you're talking about discrimination and harassment and that kind of stuff, yeah, you can't. Yeah, that's more egregious than having the guy take phone calls about while he's out of the office.
It would be very interesting to see how the league chooses to handle this. My guess is behind closed doors and out of the public eye as best as possible. But that is not a good look at all. It's probably helpful that GM no longer works there. Neither does Terry McDonough, because you have a new GM and a new head coach and that whole thing. But oof,
that must have been a
messy.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like anything but a toxic work environment to me.
Yeah,
which probably is why they look like they do on the field, at some measure.
Yeah. So that is Around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health. And we have to take a break here. Before we do, though, we want to let you know the topic of the day for you to discuss. What needs to happen for the Bills to take the best player available in this year's draft? I think there are a lot of people that say there are glaring needs for this football team even now on the roster. What has to happen in your mind to be comfortable with the Bills going with their best player available approach? when the draft opens up on April 27th. 803-0550, number to get on board, open line for you there, or 1-888-550-2550, toll free to get on, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Break time for us, but we're back in a few here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on this Wednesday, what has quickly become a rainy Wednesday here in Western New York. Got some major T-storms coming through, so be on the lookout for those. Thunder and lightning we already heard around here. Well, we're sitting here in the studio. But we're just talking about what needs to happen for the Bills to take the best player available in this year's NFL draft. So you let us know what that has to be, so the Bills can use their best player available approach in the draft. We always hear Brandon Bean say how they want to fill as many holes as possible so they don't feel compelled to address need when they're on the clock. Now, that also, that can happen sometimes if the value is right, as we saw last year when they traded up two spots and took Kyir Elam when they sorely needed a cornerback. So there is a time when value can meet need, but more often than not, with as many variables as there are in the draft, that doesn't happen.
I wonder if you do you trade up when you know there's a guy you really need and he's going to be gone and there's a drop-off after him? Is that when you trade up a couple spots to make sure you don't get caught like that? The problem with doing that is a guy like Christian Benford.
Right.
Where all of a sudden you do, and then you get a guy that really actually can play, and you get him like five rounds later.
Yeah, but those, I would think more often than not, those are few and far between, right? Like, it can happen, sure. How often does it happen? I don't know. We'd have to kind of do some research on that.
Yeah, I mean, because for everything you say, every axiom you come up with that relates to the NFL draft, there's like always more than a handful of exceptions.
Yeah.
Teams that, you know, didn't, like Tom Brady's an exception, you know. All these guys. Steph Diggs is an exception. He's a fourth rounder.
Fifth rounder.
I mean, come on. Matt Milano, same thing. Then you trade up to get a guy like the Bills did.
Well, I mean,
you know,
we know the numbers say that there are more undrafted players in the NFL than first round draft picks.
Yeah.
So yeah. They help fill out rosters.
Not as many undrafted guys in the Hall of Fame, though.
That is true.
So, you know.
Let's go to the phones and see what you think at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. What needs to happen for the Bills to take the best player available in this year's NFL draft and use the approach that has worked well for Brandon Bean thus far? We go to Patrick in Buffalo leading us off today. What do you have for us, Patrick?
Hello, guys. Listen, I'm not so concerned about the draft. What's most concerning at Buffalo, I honestly believe, and a lot of people with me, is to get to the Super Bowl and win it, Josh Allen has to call the plays. Everybody in Buffalo would love to see it. He'd be more dangerous than ever. He's got to feel like no tomorrow out there. No offense to Dorsey, but I don't want to see third and long, first down, next play, hand up off the middle for a two-yard loss. It's not going to make it. He can call the plays for the backups. I mean, this guy has done everything they've asked of him. He's a one-man Mississippi. If you want to get to the Super Bowl and win it, I don't see a downside to that, trying to make that happen, trying to do have him call the plays. I don't see a downside. I'll let you guys talk it over, and I just wanted to put that in, okay?
All right. Thanks, Patrick. I played with a guy who called his own plays. He did a great job. We never won one either. I'm sorry, Patrick. I don't know if I can get behind that. You can always say, hey, they came up short. I get all that. They didn't do it. But this is a team that scored more points than 30 teams in the league last year. And they were a juggernaut. And for a variety of reasons that I don't think had anything to do with who was calling the plays, came up short. So I don't know that you can point to the offense last year and say that was, you know, Josh Allen not calling the plays was the reason they didn't go to and win the Super Bowl. I've said it before, I'll say it again. The reason they didn't get to the Super Bowl and win is because they didn't play well on the last day of the year. They didn't play well against Cincinnati. You got to play good on that day. It's the same reason the 13-second game was so enticing, because they did play well on that day, still ended up and losing it with, you know, three mistakes in a row to follow up. Same thing. They didn't play well enough in the AFC Championship game in 2020, and the Chiefs did. You got to just – they're good enough to go to and win the Super Bowl right now with the roster they had last year without any changes. But you got to play well on that day. Now, they're going to have a whole new roster, you know, a lot of new guys on this roster. It happens every year to every team. They're going to be good enough again this year, in my opinion, to go to and win it. But you got to play well on the days you have to play well. So I don't know that Josh Allen calling his own plays is the thing that'll get him over the top. Certainly, every once in a while, you think maybe he's got a feel. He could call a play now and then. But with the offenses as complex and as wide-ranging as they are in the NFL today, it's hard for a guy to keep all of that. That's the reason those guys have a call sheet. Think about it. They invented everything on that sheet or copied it from somebody they really liked. They wrote it. They formulated this sheet that's got all those – they got hundreds of plays on it. They wrote it all on there. They got it all printed. They're the ones who installed it. They're the ones who taught their players how to do it. They're the ones who – or have a plan for whatever game they're in, and even they need a sheet in front of them to keep track of it.
And Josh has a wristband.
Josh has got a wristband, and he's gonna flip through whatever role. He's a smart guy, but man, everybody in that building is a smart guy. Ken Dorsey's a smart guy. It's hard to do.
Here's the other element in terms of things being different from when you guys were playing and when Josh is playing now. Josh is already calling plays. There are so many RPOs
right. Built
into the offense, which is a run-pass option play, or if you want to call it a PRO, pass-run option, which is starting to happen now. Josh has to make a conscious decision on all of those play calls. Are we sticking with the run, or am I pulling it out of my running back's breadbasket and I'm throwing the ball? So he's making a conscious play-calling decision probably 70% of the time. I'm not going to pretend to know off the top of my head what the percentage of RPOs within the scope of the offense was, but they ran a lot of them. And Josh has to make a decision in a split second about what play they are running, the run or the pass. So in a way, he's already doing that in many instances. So, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. You think everybody would love it. I respectfully disagree. I don't think everybody would love it. And what is the prevailing opinion of most Bills fans? Josh has to do everything. Now you want him to call the plays too?
That's a good point.
I mean, how much more you want to give him? So I think I understand where you're coming from, Patrick, but I just think it's a little misguided, and he already has play-calling decisions to make in an instant
that's true.
On a lot of the plays within the scope of this offense.
When you give him, if you gave Josh the ability to call his own plays and wanted him to call the whole game, you would start having the inability to run a full offense and make, you know, adjustments on the fly as well as they do. Back in the 90s when Jim Kelly was calling his own plays, I'll be honest with you, they ran like maybe 10 different plays.
Yeah.
And that means
that doesn't happen anymore.
Maybe not 10. Maybe you could construe it and say it was 20, but you run the same 10 plays to one side and then
flip the field
and do it the other direction. So right and left, if that's two different plays, the same play right and the same play left, we ran a maximum of 20 different plays. 10 different plays we had to run. And for a variety of reasons, mostly because we had five Hall of Fame guys on that offense, or at least Hall of Fame caliber players on that offense, you could get away with it. Because you had a couple of Hall of Fame guys, quality guys on the offensive line. You had a Hall of Fame quarterback, a running back, and two wideouts. The four of them are in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah. It all sounds well and good, and it works when you got guys like that. But offenses in the NFL today, because of the complexity of the defenses they face, have to be able to change like philosophies between series. So you go from being a four wide out, one back team, the next series you come out and you're a three wide out, tight end, and a fullback team, you know, a wing back. So you just got to be able to do that. And to expect a quarterback to keep track of all that and have a menu of plays within each of those philosophies, it's way too much to ask.
Yeah.
And Brownie's right. Everybody already complains that Josh has to do more than his share. I think you're asking almost the impossible.
You're putting a mountainous load on him on top of that by having him call players.
In today's NFL.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls, so stay where you are if you're holding at 803-0550. As we talk about what needs to happen for the Bills to take the best player available in this year's draft, either to their roster or in front of them at pick 27. We're back with more here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, so we're talking about what has to happen to allow the Bills to go best player available in this year's draft, either in front of them in the 26 picks that precede them or to their own roster. 803-0550, the number to get on board. We go back to the phones and to Mark in New Jersey. What do you got for us, Mark?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. It's a better class than last year, only in pretty much the wide receivers last year were trumped this one by a mile. Everywhere else, it pretty much evens out. But the thing that's going to help the Bills exponentially more, maybe they don't have to do a trade, what was it, two spots up last year, 25 to 23? There's potentially, now with Hooker getting a lot of buzz, five quarterbacks instead of just one at pick 18 was Pickett. So that's going to definitely help drive guys down to the Bills. And then you throw in a running back who's probably going to go before the Bills pick. That makes potentially six guys. That's a significant amount.
Yeah. No, that's hard to argue. And, you know, there's reason to believe that, you know, even picking that low at 27, and thanks for the call, Mark, even picking that low at 27, the Bills could have a look at potentially one of the top three receivers in the draft.
Yeah,
they could have a look at
20 guys.
You're going to probably have a look at probably the best tight end in the draft is probably still going to be on the board. Linebacker in the draft will still be on the board. And you might be able to get one of the top five offensive tackles in the class. Five quarterbacks are going and five pass rushers are going. I mean, there's going to be five pass rushers off the board. We know that. There's going to be at least one defensive tackle. And there's probably going to be three or four corners. So you can very quickly get to 20 players.
Yeah.
And then it's a crapshoot the rest of the way, and you just kind of hold your breath until 27.
Right. But that's, I mean, conceivably, four of the first five are going to go quarterback. Maybe.
Could happen.
Arizona's not going to.
No.
But Carolina, Houston, absolutely are going to. Indianapolis, absolutely is going to. And Seattle, you can make a case for them doing that. But then you start getting into what's next. You know, guys like Jalen Carter, the edge rushers, are going to go. But you're not going to have, like, four of those go in the top 10.
No, but you'll have four or five go before you get to the Bills.
Then you got offensive linemen. You're going to have three
offensive
or four
tackles.
Of those.
Yep.
Okay,
corners.
So three or four offensive linemen, three or four defensive linemen. That gives you, like, seven or eight. Plus the four quarterbacks. That's 11. That's nine more guys.
Yep. Four corners.
No, probably. That's 18 more guys you got to get to. That's a lot.
It is.
That's a lot, particularly when you get down out of the top 10 and you got these teams that are sitting there going, plus teams like the Jets and Seattle, who have two first-round picks.
Philadelphia has two.
Philly's got two. You know, tight end becomes a thing. You're right. There's just no way to know that, all this.
It's a long way to go.
It's a long way to go. You're right, though. The more guys that are taken, like...
Yeah, Hendon Hooker becomes a first-round pick, benefit to the Bills,
absolutely,
provided it's in front of them.
That's right. That's true. That knocks one further guy down. But then you run into the thing, like, what are you going to do if a guy at a position we never thought we needed or would draft is available, and he is an absolute stone-cold killer?
You take him.
You got to take him. Yeah. You got to take Jalen Carter if he falls to 27, right? You got to take, you know, you got to take, you know, a corner.
Yeah.
You got to take those.
I get it.
Yeah, running back. You know, one of the, who's it going to be? You know, certainly one of the tight ends. Yeah, you can make a case for those guys all day. Offensive lineman, sure, okay. But once you get out of those first couple, a lot of these guys are, you know, it levels out for every player, every position. It's like, who do you want? Because you got about nine guys that you could make a case for.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Let's check the phones again and go to John in Buffalo here. What do you got for us, John? You're on One Bills Live.
I don't know. You got me, Chris?
Yeah, we got you.
Go ahead.
Well, my name's not John. It's Tom.
Okay, they told me it was John, so forgive me, Tom.
They write it down. Sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
No, this is Tom from the West Side. Hey, guys, I hope you're enjoying the weather.
Yeah. It's a real picnic out there.
Thunderstorm. Yeah, we just had a thunderstorm roll through here.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I think they ought to sign a free agent linebacker because that way it opens up the whole board for us. We could honestly pick the best player available. I don't want a running back. I would rather have a wide receiver or a cornerback or even a tight end.
Yeah. Yeah, it is the most glaring hole, Tom. There's no question about it, and thanks for the call. We're up against the break here. You sign a veteran linebacker on a one-year deal that is capable of starting. Now you've just completely opened all options to yourself at 27 where you don't have a glaring need staring at you in the face. Now, look, if they get to 27 – and the value's not right at linebacker, that doesn't mean that Brandon Bean's picking a linebacker. But it'll still be sitting there in the back of his head, like, at some point here, I got to get one.
Right. That,
so if
the
you
linebacker,
eliminate that, you're in good shape.
Yeah, I'm kind of with him. I mean, I'm really not interested in drafting a running back. But the thing that is interesting to me, though, he said running back, tight end, or wide receiver, he would. He's thinking offense. I think I'm still in the offensive.
He said corner too.
Yeah, I'm still in the offensive side of the ball. I think this is a team that is still in an arms race, and if you want to help your team win, take a little bit off the quarterback, give him some more options, because Josh is first and foremost a playmaker. Give him some guys that can go out there and create like he can. You know, they can get open and give him an option to get rid of the football. I'm today I'm in that camp. Give me more firepower, you know. I'm kind of ready to go that route. I'm in the arms race is what I'm saying, I guess.
Oh, I am too. I would lean offense there as well.
And I'm talking about weapons, not offensive linemen this time. I mean,
Okay.
I mean, you can get offensive linemen. Okay, I get it, but I'm...
What happened? It starts in the trenches, Steve.
I'm all about it, man. If they take one, I'll be very happy with that. But I'm still saying stay on the offensive side of the ball. But today I'd rather have, I don't know, one of the receivers or something.
Okay. Steve's preferences change with the weather, apparently.
It's stormy out.
We have to take a break. When we come back, hour number two, we will be joined by Yahoo Sports NFL fantasy writer and analyst Matt Harmon, also the creator of the Reception Perception Wide Receiver Evaluation Method. We'll talk to him about that when we return here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned.
Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here we are in hour number two. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to be joined now in hour number two on a Wednesday by Yahoo Sports NFL analyst Matt Harmon here on the show, going to help us with some draft profiles that he's been dropping over there. And we do have to get into it with him about his whole thing on receivers, which is pretty interesting, Steve. And I want to get the name of this thing right. The reception perception. Evaluation of wide receivers. Talk to us, Matt, if you could, and thanks for joining us, about the genesis of this idea and what it actually spells out as far as the receiver class is concerned.
Well, hey, I really appreciate you guys having me. And absolutely love to get into it. So reception perception was the series that and methodology that I came up with to evaluate the wide receiver position. I came up with this about 2013 was when I really started doing the underlying work, and then eventually debuted it to the public in 2014. So I have full season data from the NFL from 2014 to this current season, which I'm still kind of in progress right now charting out. So basically what I do is over an 8-game sample for NFL players and college players, because that was where I saw that the data would sort of normalize to reflect a full season's result. I go in and I chart every single route that they run in that segment of games, where they line up, which I think is super important. Are we talking about an X receiver, a flanker, a slot? Because, I mean, you guys know this, like a wide receiver is not a wide receiver is not a wide receiver. There's so much variance within the position. So I'm really trying to not just quantify route running and put like a percentage behind how often these guys are able to get open and get separation against man zone press coverage, but also within each individual route type, and really trying to paint a full picture of where a wide receiver excels within each individual NFL offense, where they excel on the field, and what type of roles we can expect them to play, which I think is obviously really interesting for the Buffalo Bills this offseason, but also this draft class as a whole, I know is a bit of a different wide receiver class than what we've seen the last couple of years.
Yeah, the wide receiver class over the last 4 or 5 years has been one great class after another. These big alpha male guys coming out that can dominate, mm-hmm. be the absolute number one receiver. This class, however, seems a little different than that. You got a bunch of guys that are under 6 foot, under 190 pounds. What differentiates these guys within that class?
Yeah, so this is something I'm working on for reception perception right now, is a prospect ranking of the last three classes combined. So 2021 to 2023, which I think helps people sort of put into a picture where these guys kind of rank within the position. Because you're right, the last few classes just, I mean, stud after stud after stud. And it hasn't always been in that typical big X receiver package. I mean, DeVonta Smith, I think, is kind of gaining ground in terms of being a legit number one receiver sure. himself. And he's, I mean, a completely different package, and even his own teammate, AJ Brown. So I think it's helpful to paint wide receivers in how they fall from a role perspective. And, you know, you're right. There's a lot of guys that are sub 200 pounds, sub 6 foot. But a lot of guys that I think profile as really good complementary players, you know, potential flankers, some guys that you can move into the slot as well. Like if you're looking for a really good quality number two receiver that doesn't necessarily ever have to be more than just your 1B type of guy, I think this is actually a great draft class of guys that in the late first round, maybe even mid to early second round, there's going to be a lot of potential options for you. And then it just really is kind of the flavor that you're looking for.
Yeah. I mean, one of those guys who certainly does have size in this class and may be available a little bit later is that Ole Miss kid, Jonathan Mingo. I know there isn't a huge body of work there, but he's an intriguing player. I believe you guys did a profile on him, right? Is there anything that yes. stands out about maybe his route tree and how he was used at Ole Miss?
I'm so glad that you brought up Jonathan Mingo, because he's not one of, you know, the highest ranked, or he's not one of the first receivers that you think of, but I really, really liked this guy in a very similar way that I liked Amon-Ra St. Brown coming into the NFL draft a few years ago. Amon-Ra St. Brown, his last year in his reception perception sample from USC, his final year there, he was like a 70% outside receiver. But, you know, I wrote this in the profile that people can find on the site from back then. I wrote, like, this guy, like, my instincts tell me he needs to be like a big slot receiver. He needs to be that power slot type of guy that you could play outside in two receiver sets. But when you go to 11 personnel, like, you're going to want this guy inside because he gets great separation on slants, curls, flat routes. And he's got such great hands. And even if you wanted to use him downfield, he could be like a box out type of guy. And he's a bully after the catch. And I was so intrigued that Jonathan Mingo, when I went to do his work for Ole Miss, he's, again, about a 60-70 outside receiver in the game sampled for reception perception, but they used him sometimes as like an almost like pseudo tight end, like tight to the line in the backfield as a blocker sometimes. And I know like blocking is not the first thing that people think of with wide receivers, but it is important, especially if you want to set tempo as a run-based team. And I think Mingo can do that. He is another guy that, again, slants, curls, flat routes, closer to the line of scrimmage. He can get separation there, but he really plays with the bully ball attitude down the field as a contested catch player. He tracks the ball well, and he can break tackles after the catch. His overall success rates against man and zone coverage, if you line them up next to Amon-Ra St. Brown coming into the NFL from USC, they are almost darn near identical. So I think it's a really good pro comparison for him and a guy that I think could play that type of role in the NFL.
What's your best guess is the order that the top guys come off the board?
Oh, man, that's hard because, again, it's the flavor. It's the flavor that you want at the receiver position. To me personally, I think Jaxon Smith-Njigba stands atop the class, and I think he's kind of in his own tier compared to these other players. You know, primarily a slot receiver at Ohio State, almost exclusively a slot receiver in 2021 with a couple of guys that were awesome in the NFL, and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, a couple of guys that were legit separators on the outside. But you know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba has the second best success rate versus man coverage score that I've charted from the prospects this year. He's a guy that I still think if you wanted to play him outside, he could play a little bit outside, but he would be a total weapon inside. He's just so crafty as a route runner and a guy that I think just projects so cleanly to the NFL. So I feel like he will probably be the first off the board. And, you know, based on, again, what your team needs, I think he can fill almost anything that you need unless you're looking for that big body X receiver. I would guess that the second guy off the board is probably Jordan Addison from USC last year and from Pitt the year prior. I think he profiles similarly to like a Jahan Dotson last year as a guy that I think is probably, again, a really good number two receiver. But, you know, a good route runner, a guy that's got great hands and very reliable. I think he has great instincts and feel for the position. I think he's probably number two. Quentin Johnston is the wild card to me, guys, because we know that teams love size. They love speed. He's got production. But there are questions about his profile. And again, is he going to be a complete full field number one receiver? I think there are some questions to answer there. He's got questions with his hands. He's got questions with his ability to, you know, actually extend his arms and pluck balls away from his body. There's that. Then I think it's like a complete crapshoot. You know, somebody's going to like Jalin Hyatt's speed, even if he comes from a weird offense. He could sneak in there and be like the second receiver off the board, the third receiver off the board, or I could see him falling into the second round. So it's really going to be a very unpredictable year to me at wide receiver.
Another guy that could still be on the board when the Bills are picking late in round three, unless somebody really likes him, takes him earlier, is the Michigan State kid, Jaden Reed, who's kind of been a little bit under the radar. I know you did a profile on him too. I was impressed with his success rate against man coverage. It kind of shows that he's got a little nasty to him, even though he only goes 5'11". Would you say, based on, you know, the route tree research that you've done on him, that maybe he plays a little bit bigger than his size?
Yeah, I think he shows you some real flashes of being a player who could be a starting level receiver in the NFL. I didn't make this comparison because Stephon Diggs is like one of my favorite reception perception players of all time. Of course, you guys know what an incredible route runner he is, his ability to get separation and win at all three levels. He was a guy that back in 2017 with the Minnesota Vikings, he was leading the NFL in reception perception, success rate versus man and press coverage. And that was before he had kind of established himself as an elite player. I think Jaden Reed, other people have made that comparison to Steph Diggs. And I understand it because, like you mentioned, the ability to separate against man coverage is there. The ability to get off the line of scrimmage against press coverage is there. Right now, he actually has the top success rate versus press coverage among the prospects I've charted for this class, which I think is really interesting for a guy who's not going to go in the first round. You know, he might go on day two. I think that would be a great range for him. And he is like one or two tweaks away from being, I think, a really great receiver. Like, if he just is a bit better of a finisher within his routes and a bit more of a finisher at the contested catch point, like I think he could be on that Terry McLaurin, Stephon Diggs axis of receiver. But another comparison would be like if he kind of hits more of like the floor outcome, maybe he'd be like a Russell Gage type of player, a reserve guy that is probably your number three receiver, but can give you really good reps. And if called upon, we've seen Russell Gage have a couple of, like, especially his last year with the Falcons was a really nice year. So I like Jaden Reed a lot. He is one of my favorite prospects that I think is going to go on day two, and I think has upside to potentially be a starter there.
One of the surprising names you just mentioned, Jordan Addison out of USC. I mean, he spent some, he only played at USC for 1 year, was at Pitt before that. And didn't have as good a year as he did 2 years ago when he was at Pitt, when he was a Biletnikoff Award winner and all that. You had him, and you said he may be in the top one or two receivers off the board. That's a little higher than a lot of people have him pegged. Why do you think your evaluation is a little different?
I think that what's just so nice about Jordan Addison is that he feels like a very easy, clean prospect to project. Again, a guy not quite as much as Jackson Smith and Jigba, who I mentioned is my favorite. But the thing with Jordan Addison to me is when you look at him last year at USC, and again, you mentioned he wasn't necessarily the big producer that he was at Pitt. I think he stylistically, this is my favorite part about receivers, is that these guys can be great individually, and I think that's what reception perception is all about, isolating these guys as individual players. But a lot of it, like from a statistical perspective or reaching their ceiling as a producer, is going to come down to their fit with the quarterback. I think a timing, refined quarterback receiver like Jordan Addison maybe doesn't necessarily like get completely reach the high end of his range of outcomes with like more of a playmaker like Caleb Williams was last year. I mean, that guy might be the first pick in the draft, but my favorite thing about Jordan Addison, you look at his success rate on curl routes, slant routes, and dig routes, you know, these base NFL routes that are going to be in every route combination in every single offense, especially like routes like the dig and slant that are going to work the middle of the field. You can have your X receiver run those routes. You could have your flanker receiver run those routes. 89.5% success rate on the dig, 82.9% success rate on the curl, 92.3% success rate on the slant. Like, he will absolutely thump you over and over and over again with those short and intermediate routes. Again, he feels very much like just a good number two receiver. Maybe he has a bit of a cap ceiling, but I think if you're looking for a complimentary player, he's a great fit there.
The one last guy I wanted to run by you was a guy that looked good on tape initially, but then the more you watch, there was like some inconsistencies to his game. This SMU receiver, Rashee Rice, nice size, looks like an outside guy. Separation, though, sometimes seems to be something he can't master on a consistent basis. So I'm figuring that's going to slide him down the board. What did you kind of find in your research on him?
Consistency is the great word to bring up there with Rashee Rice, because I think I probably wrote this, you know, so many times in his profile that actually just went up this morning, is, man, you see the flashes. You really see flashes of good play there. You see flashes of a guy that, like, he can stack a defender on a nine route and get great separation like two times in a row, and then the next three he's going to get, you know, kind of ragdolled by the same defender. Or really bullied at the contested catch point. I think he does show you those flashes of being that player, but there's a lot of development that needs to take place there. Even in contested catch situations, 56.3% contested catch rate for me in reception perception. And that kind of goes to show you, like, yeah, it could go either way. Like, he can absolutely make that fantastic catch. And then other times he'll miss time his jumps. He'll jump too early. He'll jump too late. Sometimes that gets him a lot of PI flags there, but other times it ends up being a missed opportunity. So to me, I think he's like a day three developmental receiver that, if you have some vets in the room that you really trust, you've got a good wide receiver coach that you feel really good about, I think you take him and you just try to draft and develop him. If you need an immediate contributor right away, I think this guy's a little bit away from a developmental perspective from getting on the field right now and contributing. But you're right about the size and the flashes. Those are absolutely there.
What do you think? Is there a name on this in this draft class? And you know, this is a purely subjective, and you can say whatever you want. Is there a name in this draft class you think is so under the radar, doesn't deserve to be? I know we hit on one earlier. What are your thoughts about a guy that you think is going to be a really good pro that is going to slide down the board? Maybe every team in the league will have a shot at him before somebody takes him.
I think everybody's going to have a shot at Josh Downs. And again, what is under the radar, a little bit subjective, but oh man, I love Josh Downs. I think he played, I knew within like three routes he was going to be one of my favorite receivers in this class, because he's, again, a smaller guy. I mean, very small, 5'9", 171. He projects as probably a slot receiver in the NFL. He primarily played a slot receiver at UNC last year. He's got the number one success rate versus man coverage score for me this year among the prospects charted. He's a guy that just knows how to set up his routes. He knows how to set up defenders. He's got great tempo as a route runner. He just knows how to get himself open as that slot receiver. You know, if you're looking for somebody to run a lot of option routes, I think he's a great option there. If you're looking for a guy to be a little bit more than just your typical bunny hop slot receiver, I think he's a great player there. You know, a Jamison Crowder type, maybe. I always liked Jamison Crowder early in his career as a guy who could get those short passes, but could also work on like dig routes and post routes. I think you see some of that from Josh Downs as well, who's also, by the way, the best contested catch player in this draft. And we're talking about a guy that's like 5'9 and 171. He will stand up physically at the catch point, and he doesn't get bullied by bigger defenders or guys that are typically going to make those contested catches or pull them away from an opposing offensive player. I love Josh Downs. I think if you're just looking for a safe guy that, again, probably never going to be a number one receiver, but a guy that you take in the second round or third round, and I mean, I would take him the second round, no question, and you just get him in there, he could catch like 90 balls a season and just be a really solid player for you.
ReceptionPerception.com. That's where you got to go to find Yahoo Sports NFL analyst Matt Harmon's work. Matt, thanks for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck with sticking up more of those profiles as we get closer to the draft here.
Yeah, appreciate you. Got a few more coming out, and I'm looking forward to this draft. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, awesome, take care. Man, that's Matt Harmon joining us. He is NFL analyst for Yahoo Sports and kind of has his own thing going there at ReceptionPerception.com. I cannot imagine every play tracking routes on a player for 8 games. Oh my Lord.
Yeah,
that's yeoman's work, man.
It's a little tedious, I would think. Yeah, but that's,
my eyes would fall out of my head.
It's amazing. Guys will commit themselves to doing it. He's been doing it for a while now, and the more you do it, the more you kind of get the ability to pick guys apart. His take on Mingo, I loved, and that the contested catches are a big part of what the NFL is all about. It's hard to win those battles, but I got to tip your hat to those guys that are. It's like our own guy Greg
Cosell.
Yeah. He loves doing it, and yeah, you do what you love, man. You'll be good at it. I'm telling you, he's got some really good evaluations. I'll say that.
Yeah.
He seems spot on, and that's,
I will say, you know, like, I'm intrigued by some of these receivers that are a little further down the board. You know, if they don't get a guy in round one at 27 at the receiver spot, I do not think for a second that all is lost. I think there are some nice players, and I like the players that got a little bit of an attitude. You know, Jonathan Mingo being a bully ball player, I like that. Jaden Reed is kind of cut from the same cloth from Michigan State. I like that. And those are guys that, you know, could still be on the board come late day two. So,
right.
You know, if they don't get a receiver in round one, it's not the end of the world. Now, we get to day three and we still don't have one, then I might get a little nervous.
Right.
But I guess what I'm saying is there is depth in this class. Even though you don't have the alpha males, as we've talked about, true number ones, the Bills don't need a true number one. They need somebody that can compete for a number two role here with Gabe Davis. So I think that can be had somewhere on the first 2 days of the draft that goes even beyond round one. That's what has me encouraged. I think there are enough players in this pool where the Bills could be very happy with someone they get at pick, what are they, 91 in round three?
Yeah.
I think it'd be very happy with somebody that they get down as far down as that, even at the receiver position. We had a funny little thing happen, and Steve, this is great.
This is
so mom, it's not even funny. So there was this mom who was at an airport. She's waiting for a plane, and she sees this stranger, you know, sitting there waiting for the same plane. And she was of the opinion that the young man looked like Chris Pratt.
He of the
so she decides
yes, the
off the well no he was in Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec, and he also
and he
the,
did the Jurassic Park movies.
And also he was in the Avenger or the
he's done a lot of stuff.
Galaxy Guardians of the Galaxy.
Big time movie star.
Yes.
Anyway,
an A-list.
She thinks this stranger sitting next to her in the terminal waiting for the airplane looks like Chris Pratt. So she decides she's going to play a joke on her daughter.
She tells the guy, I think you look like Chris Pratt.
Yeah, take a photo with me. I'm going to try to pull a fast one on my daughter and say, hey, I met Chris Pratt.
Guy was a great guy. He said, yeah.
Guy's like, yeah, I'll do it.
I'll do it.
So he poses next to her in the photo and texts her daughter, hey, I met Chris Pratt. So before she can get a response, another person in the terminal goes, that's not Chris Pratt.
You look more like...
That's Josh Allen. And so they pull up a photo of Josh Allen and
the mom.
The mom looks at the photo and she
doubles down.
She goes, "Yeah, you do look a little like Josh Allen, but he's got a square head. You don't have a square head." And so he's like, so then at this point he's laughing.
Josh Allen.
It was Josh Allen.
It was Josh, yeah.
We've got the photo for our MSG viewers, and there's the mom with her text that says, "I just met Chris Pratt."
And Josh Allen giving her the quintessential thumbs up in the picture.
Apparently, this poor woman is clueless and says, obviously not a Bills fan either.
Yeah, it's great because he goes, oh, you look like Chris Pratt. He goes, maybe a little, I don't know. And the guy goes, you look like Josh Allen. He goes, sometimes I get that.
Yeah.
And he laughs. And she goes, no, you don't look like Josh. No,
he's got a square head.
To that, Josh laughed. Yeah. He's like, okay. He never said anything.
Never gave it up.
She didn't know until later.
Yeah, probably after she was off the plane.
It's pretty awesome.
That is so Josh playing along with that whole thing. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Got the Josh. He does
have a square head. You're right.
He's got the Chris Pratt beard thing going, you know, that like he always has, the 3-day beard. And he looks like Chris Pratt.
I can just see.
Same grooming, anyway.
This poor mother and what she probably endured. Here she thinks she's playing a joke on her daughter. And her daughter is probably like, Mom, you were taking a picture with Josh Allen and you didn't know?
It's like, yeah.
So she's so the joke ends up being on her.
Yeah.
Although she does have a photo with a famous quarterback, so I guess she has that.
With the wrong name at the bottom.
With the wrong name at the bottom.
Chris Pratt.
Well, she can reproduce the photo and hang it somewhere.
That's great. There you go.
I just thought that was hilarious. I just met Chris Pratt.
That is such a mom thing.
It is so mom.
That is so mom.
Poor mom being clueless. I loved it, though. That was great.
That is good. Good for Josh for playing along.
Well, would you expect anything else?
No,
I mean,
he's really got
a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
So I am not the least bit surprised. And how often is he mistaken for somebody else? That had to be a new thing for him.
Right. Yeah,
we'll have to
true.
Ask him the next time we see him. Do you get mistaken for Chris Pratt? Like, if people don't recognize you for who you actually are, who are you like compared to? You know what I mean?
Right.
What's the name that comes up?
And here's
often?
The thing too: a guy like Josh, people watch movies and they get, you know, a guy like Chris Pratt who's in Guardians of the Galaxy and all these other things, and he seems big in those movies. I don't have any idea how big he is, but Josh, you know, being as big as he is, kind of plays into the larger-than-life kind of thing. Oh, yeah, there's that the guy that plays a superhero on Guardians of the Galaxy. There he is. And, you know, so it kind of plays into it. And, because, you know, if everybody's seen him in person, the guy's as tall as an oak tree. You can't miss him. You can't miss him. So having him, you know, be there and having mom pull that, that's pretty funny.
Whew. That's good.
That's really good.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, we'll get back to the phones as we want to ask you what has to happen in front of the Bills at 27 in order for them to take best player available, or maybe something has to happen to their roster between now and then as well. You let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. We're back with your phone calls next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown and Steve Tasker with you.
Send me a picture.
Yeah, can't wait. Got to get back to the phones, as we are asking you today what has to happen in front of the Bills and their pick at 27 to give them the freedom to go best player available. Maybe something has to happen on their roster as well. We go back to the phones, and we lead off with Art in Rochester for this segment. What do you got for us, Art?
Hey, hi, how you doing? I'm a longtime Bills fan. I watch your show almost every day. It's a great show.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
I think I'm not sure what we need to do to make something happen on the roster, but I think Jordan Addison is the wide receiver we need to get. I mean, Harmon here that you had on there, an analysis, had a great analysis of him. He's when he was with Pitt, he had 100 catches for 1,500 and some yards.
Yep.
When he was USC, it was 59 catches, 875 yards. That's 15 yards a catch. This kid does everything. I mean, he catches everything, as Harmon said that it was like 90% plus career contested catches. He gets open a lot. He has a lot of yards after the catch. It's almost akin to what Beasley was in his prime. I mean, he can catch while he'd be wide receiver outside, inside, check downs or whatever. I just think that he's the one that we need to have. If we can, he slides down to 27, I think he should.
Yeah.
There's not that many needs for other teams to pick wide receivers, I don't think.
Well,
tell me what you think, and I'll listen.
I'll say what, Art. I think there's a really good chance Jordan Addison's there if the Bills pick indeed at 27. I think there's a chance he'll be there. I really do.
I think people are going to knock him for his size. I think that's a little misguided. I know people are always worried about durability, week-to-week availability, all of those things. I think I said this yesterday on the show. He is a three-level receiver. He can win for you in the short game, in the intermediate game, and deep. And he only runs a 4.49. It's not like he's some kind of blazer, but he is a precision route runner. And when I watched him on tape, there were some elements of Diggs' route running precision to his game. I'm going to reiterate, as I did yesterday, I'm not saying he's Diggs, but the way he wins on routes, he does it in a similar way to the way Diggs does. He is a technician. There's a route that reminds me of Diggs that our MSG viewers are watching. That's a Diggs route.
That's a Steph Diggs move right there. So's that one. So, yeah, it's – yeah. I think we got a shot at getting a guy like that.
I'd be very happy with him. And I think he's got a little dog in him, too, like Diggs does.
I would suspect, and I don't know this, I'm just saying it, I would suspect that if he's there and they draft a different wide receiver, it's because the guy has better measurables. Either he's bigger or he's faster, or both. That's the only difference I would see in a guy taken at 27, because there's always, you can make a case that you're going to be a guy further down, like at 59, the Bills could take that is exactly like that. Even he may be available at 59. You don't know. I doubt it, but he might. So you might have a hard time. You might be able to get him at 27, but you may be able to get a guy who has better measurables at 27. I don't say that they'd put a higher priority on that, because this guy's productive. He's been consistently productive at a high level in college. Most of these wide receivers we're looking at can't say that. This guy's been productive year over year. So that goes a long way, I think. So I'm with you, Art.
We shall see. But, yes, you have two people that like Jordan Addison here as well. Back to the phones and to Judy in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Judy?
You know, this draft, it doesn't excite me at all. I don't see anybody of consequence that's going to make a difference. I don't see a linebacker, a tight end, a receiver, a lineman. I just think we're talking over our heads. I don't think anybody's going to make any impact. I do have a question about one player, because I don't know too much about him on our team. Quint Morris, tight end. I remember during the year, I know they probably threw more passes, but I remember two. One was for a touchdown, and one was for a consequential first down. Does Quint Morris have a future with the Bills?
Judy, I'll tell you this. I'm with you. I think Quint Morris has a lot more he can offer, especially in the passing game. I think he's got as good a hands as any player on the roster. I don't know why he has fewer opportunities, although I know Knox is a full-blown real tight end who can go. Quentin Morris is I think the guy catches it extremely well, and I think if it wasn't for the fact that he's got Dawson Knox in front of him, I think he'd play a ton. I'm with you, Judy. I think Quentin Morris is a guy I'd like to see more of. Now, you know, you got to create stuff like that for it to happen, but I'm with you. I think Quentin Morris is a guy that the Bills could use more of. For this draft, you said it. I think that the impact of this draft, you're right, there's nobody that really excites you. There's no alpha dog, all that stuff.
Nobody?
I think
in the whole draft?
The biggest impact for this team would be, if the Bills were drafting higher or if they had their choice, I think it's got to be one of the big guys up front. That would be the most impact. I don't think – I'm with you. I don't think the skill position players in this draft are good enough to step into the Buffalo Bills roster as it's constructed right now and be like an impact player right out of the gate. Maybe you can make a case for like a Bijan Robinson, running back.
Middle linebacker that's got to start.
Maybe an inside – but even so, middle linebacker, you see him – I don't know. It depends on if he can make plays, okay. But if he's just another guy – and a good linebacker, yeah, I don't know. You need
somebody's
a guy.
Somebody's got to start there.
Well, yeah. Maybe. Maybe Jack Campbell or Drew Sanders, the two linebackers. Maybe they could make an impact.
God, I'd hope so.
But they would have to really splash. I mean, Sanders would have to come in and have another 10-sack season like he did this last year as a senior. You know what I mean? He'd have to have one of those or, you know, get 3 or 4 interceptions or 5 interceptions. Same thing with Jack Campbell. They'd have to come in and make plays to make kind of impact we'd notice or you'd see on a stat sheet. The middle linebacker, he's always or should have always have the most tackles. So that wouldn't be a surprise. But I'm kind of with Judy. But I do think there are guys who could make an impact if we drafted a big-time interior offensive lineman or a tackle. An offensive lineman could be a guy who would be felt at least by the players on the field and in the production. You wouldn't see him running for touchdowns, obviously. Yep. But I think that's where a guy like that, this draft, could make an impact.
And, Judy, you are right. Quinn Morris only caught 2 passes last year for 18 yards. One was for...
But he looked good
He didn't catch a touchdown pass. Did he?
Yeah, he caught one against Miami. Yeah.
Oh, I'm only looking. Never mind.
Remember,
looking at postseason. He caught more than 2 passes.
Yeah, he zinged.
8 passes, 84 yards.
Yeah, he caught a zip.
Yeah, touchdown.
Touchdown. We just saw it. That's the one that Josh threw right at the back of that head of the defender. And Quentin Morris pulled it in against Miami.
Yeah, difficult catch.
Very difficult catch.
Yeah, I mean, he could be used a little bit more. Tommy Sweeney is no longer here. He signed in free agency with the Giants. So, by default right now, he's your backup tight end. He's your number 2. And if I remember right, he was a former receiver in high school and then transitioned to tight end. So, he's still relatively young at the position and is still developing there. So, the hands are there. I don't think there's any debate about that. And I think he's taken very well to the blocking end of the game. So all very positive going forward for Quentin Morris. Yeah, I think there's, as Coach McDermott likes to say, there's more meat on the bone there with his development. And I expect that from him entering, what did that be, year 3, I think, coming up here for Quentin Morris. So, yeah, encouraging. I feel bad for Judy. She's down on the draft. I don't even know if she's going to watch it. She doesn't like anybody.
I'll say this though: she's on the money. She calls every once in a while. And she's always got a really good insight. I've never heard anybody have the courage to say that about an NFL draft when we're all so excited about getting new players. And she says, "That's not exciting. None of these guys." I love it. She's right.
And I think what she means is where the Bills are picking. You know, you're picking so late. It's hard to get excited about anybody.
Plus, there's none of these. What's it going to be? One of these wide receivers that's like small as small as you and me, you know? I mean,
Smurfs.
Right. They're going to be – they're not going to be – you know, Julio Jones ain't walking through the door, you know? So Calvin Johnson ain't coming through the door. So, you know, it's like, okay. And, you know, a linebacker, okay, right, I get it. And it'll be kind of the same thing. If they do pick an interior offensive lineman, it's going to be like, oh, well, now I got to go find this guy, and I don't even know what I'm looking at here. Where does he play? You know? Because, you know, he's never going to – he doesn't carry the ball. It's a very unsexy – you know, offensive linemen are very – that position group is very unsexy when you're talking about making an impact and making plays on the – it's like, oh, you know, give the ball to, a scat back. I want to see that guy run. I don't want to see an offensive lineman pulling out in front of him. So I'm – she's on it. She's totally right. We're picking 27th in this draft. And this is – listen, we've been other places – so this is a better place to be, even though it's less exciting, picking 27th rather than 7th. She's on it. I totally agree with her. It's hard to get excited when 26 other teams are going to get a pick a guy before you do, at least the way it stands now.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
She's on
Still not going to dampen my excitement for the draft. I love the draft.
Why?
Just because of all the drama and uncertainty and
the drama. Because here's the thing.
And it's the future of your football team.
Yes, it is. And I'll say this. The draft does have its moments because particularly for guys like you and me and people in the business and, you know, all the fans too. But you spend your time falling in love with people you don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You have all these things. And it's also one of the ways you can convince yourself you're a little bit smarter than everybody else. Because, you know, I knew that guy was
good. I liked that guy before anybody else did.
I knew it. It's
meanwhile,
great.
Judy's like, I didn't like anybody from the jump.
And I was right.
And I'm happy about it. All right, we got to take a break. Steve and I will close things up with some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Some final thoughts on the tweet sheet here in terms of what you think needs to happen for the Bills to take best player available at pick 27. Ron says, I would prefer an old lineman at 27, but it also depends on who's there at that spot. Would also like to see a rookie middle linebacker to compete, but not sure any are valued with first-round grades. If the Bills truly go best available, that could very possibly be a tight end.
Yeah, could also be a corner.
Interesting.
I mean, offensive line, you're always fine picking an offensive lineman. Nobody's going to squawk about it if you pick a guy who's got that value. But I'm more of a mind to pick one of the money positions. Tackle, quarterback, those two are out. They don't need them. A tackle maybe, but quarterback you're not going to take. Wide receiver, corner, or an edge rusher. Even a net, now take another edge rusher, I don't care. Do it. But there is a general thought that
if an edge rusher goes to the Bills at 27, that people are going to riot just because of the recent draft.
I get it. But you know, sooner or later, you think you're going to hit on one. But here's the thing. I think you need to pick one of those money positions because those guys up in that area have measurables that make them better than the guys they're going against. So if you're going to beat one of those guys, you got to do it with technique or with an extra guy. Measurables count, and I think when you go that high in the draft, I think two things. One, stick with measurables, and two, go with a money position. Corner, wide out, edge, tackle, one of those guys, you know? That's what I think.
I get it. Edward says, I don't see best player available happening, because if that would be true, they could end up with a running back from Texas. Draft is always about need. Well, it's about need, but what Trump's need is value every time. Yeah. Any GM, you ask him. We've got a big show tomorrow, and joining us on the show will be Leje Douzible as we find out what the heck's going on with the Jets down there. We'll see you at 1:00.